Live from the United Way of Southwest Virginia Digital Studios, this is United Live, a podcast production of the United Way of Southwest Virginia. I am your host, Ryan Dye, the Marketing and Communications Manager, and today we're talking all things about screening for your children. What is developmental screening? How often should kids be screened? What should you do if your kids aren't hitting milestones? And what kind of resources are available? Stay with us right after this break, and we're going to have a great discussion on everything you need to know as a parent here in Southwest Virginia.
Hi, I'm Christy Lester, Director of Development here at United Way of Southwest Virginia. We hope you're enjoying this podcast about the work that we're doing to make Southwest Virginia a great place to live, work, and raise a family. If you'd like to learn more, please contact me at 276-628-2160. I look forward to hearing from you, and thank you for your interest in United Way of Southwest Virginia.
All right, we're here today with Danielle Dye, our Resilience Manager for United Way of Southwest Virginia, and we're also here with Adele Rohner. She's the PARTSE Program Manager for Mount Rogers Community Services. You know, welcome to both of you guys. But first, Adele, can you just explain your role?
So thank you for having me. And so I am the local system manager for early intervention in the Mount Rogers Community Services District. We service with Smith, Bland, Carroll, Grayson, and the city of Galax. We provide services to the children birth to 3 years old that are shown developmental delays or atypical development. So I'm the central point of entry. So referrals come in through me, and I oversee all of our service coordinators and providers that work in the homes.
Awesome. Let's get right into our questions here. We're obviously talking about screening today. And this we'll start off with, what should parents be looking for as they're completing a developmental screening, or what kinds of questions should they be asking their pediatricians?
So I think the main thing to really look for is that your child is making progress, that they are not regressing, so they didn't have skills and now are no longer doing those things, aside from what's, you know, kind of typically developing, because there are skills. You know, we scoot down the stairs initially before we learn to walk down the stairs. So, you know, if your child is three and no longer scooting down the stairs, that's a good thing. They should also just look for the frequency and quality of the skills and things that they're doing. So, you know, on most of the screenings, there's three options. They do it all the time. They do it sometimes, or they do it rarely. And so you want to really look for, if it's something that you see your child only do once or twice, it's probably not something, a skill that they have mastered, and you therefore don't want to mark that they do it all the time. If they you're seeing it, you know, like an infant rolling over. Once they learn to do that, they pretty much roll over all the time, and diaper changing becomes a little difficult. If that child is only rolling over once or twice a day, you probably want to mark that they're not doing it, or that they're doing it sometimes, and then you might want to mention to your doctor. You also want to look for the quality of what it is they're doing. You know, a child should, once they're rolling over and they're doing it smoothly, it should, you know, be a nice, even, smooth movement. There shouldn't be, you know, a lot of severe arching or anything. So you really want to look for that quality of things. You know, when they're talking, if they're, you know, using, you know, saying mama and dada for you when you enter the room, not just sounds that they're saying, and they're not calling it to everybody. So just, you know, think about the quality and the frequency that they're doing all those skills.
So I'm here to share more of a parent perspective today. And so I recently had a son in September 2022, and he was born with trisomy 21, or what is better known as Down syndrome. And he is now almost 10 months old. And so as we think about developmental screening from Graham's perspective, it's going to be different, and he's going to hit his milestones at different phases and different times compared to what we consider a typical child who is developing kind of on track, on time with the CDC's developmental milestones. And one of the things from a parent perspective that I've had to learn to both accept and really train my mind is that it's not about the timing. It's not always going to hit right when the developmental milestones say he should be doing the things he should do. And that could happen for a typical child development. Different kids hit different milestones at different times. And that doesn't mean that they're always going to be behind. It just means sometimes they're a little bit slower at some things than others. And so one of the things that I advocate for when we go to our pediatrician is really ensuring that he's being measured on the Down syndrome growth chart, because there is the World Health Organization growth chart, which is what most pediatricians use for typical developing children. But if you're not comparing them on the correct chart, then that can skew the I guess feedback or where the milestones should be hitting. And so just ensuring that we're being measured on the right scale, right accountability, so that he is compared to children who are like him of his same age. And I think from that perspective, just understanding that, again, developmental milestones happen for all kids at different times, and you can't really compare one child to the next because they're all going to be different.
You're absolutely right, Danielle. And I mean, a child that's born prematurely, is you want to make sure that the doctor is giving you the paperwork that goes along with your child's adjusted age, not their chronological age. And also a child that has spent a lot of time in the NICU for whatever reason, they have not gotten those typically developing things that our infants get when they first get to come home. They've not gotten the same handling. So they're going to develop differently as well. And that's important to keep in mind. You know, they don't have to get an A on the screening. They don't have to get that 100%. You just want to make sure that they're continuing to make progress.
Kind of along those lines, you know, how often should kids be going through screenings?
I know a lot of our pediatricians in this area do them at all of the well checks. So initially, you know, you bring your child, I think it's like every couple of months, my children are 23 and 13. So it's been a long time since I've had an infant that has to go all the time. But I mean, and the CDC has a wonderful milestone moments checklist app that parents can get. And so you can just put your child's name and information in there, and it will tell you, you know, what your child should be doing at certain milestones. And so that's really good. Again, I don't think there's a set. I think, you know, you should be keeping an eye on the things that they should be doing every couple of months, but it's not like you don't have to do it every month. Just really talk to your pediatrician.
As a person who just had a child who's 10 months old, we have, just as Adele said, we've been going when we'd have to do well child checks. So within 2 or 3 days of birth, I mean, just to make sure they're, you know, progressing, they're eating properly. And then we did 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, 9 months. And those first three visits to also allow for immunizations. So as they are getting embedded with those, and then 12 months, I think 15 months, 18 months, 24 months. And beyond that, I think it's every 6 months, and then it goes to annually. So through age five. And once you hit age five, I think it's annually after that. So, but again, as Adele said, it's best, you know your child best. So if you are finding that you feel like there's questions or concerns about their overall development, then be confident in knowing that you know your child, and if you have a concern, contact your pediatrician so that you can reach out to them and say, you know, I feel like something may be off. Can we address this? Can we look at this? I feel like he or she should be doing this, and they may not. And it could be nothing, but your pediatrician is going to be able to kind of ease your fears as you're going through that process. And you don't necessarily, I mean, if it's a family doctor, it could be even the health department. These are all folks who are very familiar with the CDC's developmental milestones, and that's kind of the gold star of guidance when you're looking at those milestones, at least through age five and beyond.
So this next question kind of hits home to me. It's, should parents be alarmed if your kids haven't hit every milestone? You know, and I have a three-year-old, and I've been through this where I saw these lists, and I would sit there every day and be like, why aren't you doing this? or why aren't you doing that? And I knew in the back of my mind that's not what you should be doing, but still what I was doing. So obviously, should parents be alarmed if kids haven't hit every milestone at every checkup?
I don't think there's reason to be alarmed if your child's not hitting every single milestone at every single checklist. I mean, like I said, you don't have to get an A on the exam. And like Danielle said, all children will develop at different rates. So, you know, even in early intervention, we'll go out and do a screening tool at the intake, and a child might not be doing certain skills, but then we might come back a week or two later, and all of a sudden they are doing that skill because it might be something that the parents didn't realize that they needed to be doing. And now that we've, you know, addressed that, they have started working on that skill, or it's just that they were developing a little bit later, so it came along. I think what they need to just keep an eye on is, you know, if there are skills that are, you know, not showing up. So you might have missed them at one developmental milestone, then when you go to the next checkup at the doctor and they're missing those again, or you haven't seen those develop, that's when you want to talk to your doctor and be a little bit more concerned.
So as I mentioned, Graham, that's my son, he has Down syndrome. And when we first got connected with Early Intervention plus our NICU follow-up clinic, one thing that they shared with us is that based on just overall guidance around children with Down syndrome, he's probably going to be ongoing kind of behind 4 to 5 months. That's pretty typical for children with Down syndrome. So when we think about a six-month-old who's starting to eat solids and a child with Down syndrome is not quite ready for that just yet, if we look at Graham now, he is 10 months old. He is just now getting into eating solids and pureed food and really showing an interest in different tastes and textures. So again, I only have Graham to compare with other children because he is my only child, but at the same time too, I don't think it's necessarily anything to be alarmed about. Just knowing sometimes that, again, children develop at different rates, different times. And so I think just, again, you know your kid best. So recognizing that if you are constantly seeing that they're not holding their head up for a certain amount of time, then maybe that's something you should talk to your pediatrician about or talk to your doctor about, just to get a better idea of, well, this is a concern for me. So I always, you know, your gut and go with your gut.
Long way.
Yes.
And so you put yourself in the lens of a parent, which Danielle, you know, you are currently going through this right now. Should you be referred for a rescreening or a monitoring? What should you do as a parent?
So I think take a deep breath and just step back a little bit. So I'm also a parent. He'll be 23 in October. So when he was 18 months old, they thought that the sutures in his skull were closing prematurely. So we thought we were going to have a major surgery. We didn't, but I can remember him being like 18, 20 months old, and we went to all the different neurologists and ran all the different tests. And if you've ever been to a neurologist or a specialist, they can sometimes be a little eccentric, a little weird. They're wonderful. But we saw her, I mean, he was 18, 20 months old. We saw her like 3 or 4 different times. Each time was in a different office. It was an hour and a half, 2 hour drive to get there. And our last, I think it was like our third visit, she was like, he's speech delayed. Now keep in mind, I've done early intervention in some form since 1999. So I was well-versed in child development and in this world. And I remember crying for the hour and a half home because this perfect little boy, somebody just told me there was something not right with him. And that's disheartening. But I think give yourself that time to kind of grieve and to think about. And the people that are referring you are coming, they want what's best for your child, and they're coming to you from a place of caring and not necessarily judgment. So it doesn't reflect you as a parent when your child is being referred or is not meeting all those milestones. And just think, I mean, why would you not want to get a little bit of help? We can all use help. I mean, so why would you not follow up? So I think just take a deep breath and just go with it.
I love that you said it's okay to grieve what you thought was what we called normal. Because I remember when we got the diagnosis that Graham was going to have Down syndrome. And it was one of the most devastating situations that I had ever gone through. And I had to grieve what I thought was going to be my child and move forward to try to connect my child with the life that he was going to have. And what I knew at that time was connecting to him to as many resources that were available to us as possible was going to be the best thing I could do for him. So when you're talking about meeting these milestones or having to be rescreened because he didn't hit something at the certain age like he was supposed to, it's okay. I mean, do we succeed at everything we want to do the very first time we try? No, probably not. And so babies are no different, and children who are growing and developing in those first 5 years, they are no different than us. They need a little bit of extra time to learn how to move and crawl and talk and walk. And so I think we just have to look at it from the perspective is that, I mean, if they do need a little bit more time, they're probably going to be really good at that later. So if that's the case, then we just give them the time that they need to be rescreened, monitored, and also looking at it from the perspective of you as a parent do know your child best, but also connecting with the folks who are with your child often, especially for kids who are in childcare. I mean, what are they doing at childcare that they may not do at home? And I often think about it from the perspective that, like, when our child cries, our first instinct is to go pick them up and hold them and cuddle them. But sometimes at school, they're not able to do that for every single child in that room, so they let them kind of work it out. That doesn't mean they don't care about them, but they monitor them. They have to give them the little bit of time that they need for that just to figure out. And so I think also making sure that what you see at home is also what they see at school. So having those communicative conversations with your child's caretaker as well during the day, if it's not you as a parent or a caregiver.
You said a word in there that resonates really well, resources. So what kind of resources are available to parents out there?
So, I mean, obviously, I mean, United Way, because we're here, this is a United Way podcast. And then, I mean, early intervention, because that's what I'm here from. But your pediatrician, you should go to a pediatrician that you feel like you're being listened to and that you feel comfortable telling when you feel like your child is struggling or not doing things. And you want to feel as a parent listened to, because like Danielle said, I mean, you know your child best. You have those gut feelings. So if you think there's something wrong, you need a doctor that's going to listen and help you follow through on those things. There's WIC, the Women, Infant, and Children. Sorry, I can't remember what all those letters stand for. But that's always a really good resource if families qualify. All your local health departments, there are some that will have well baby programs. I don't think they're in most counties, but I don't know that all counties have that support. So there are nurses that will come out and do weight checks and wellness checks in between those pediatrician. The CDC milestone moments is one we've already mentioned. There's PETSI, which is a parent education advocacy training center, and that's a really good resource for parents as well. There's Care Connections here in Southwest Virginia. There's the Virginia Autism Center out of VCU. So, I mean, there's lots of things out there. It might take a little bit of extra help to kind of explore, but pediatricians should be able to connect you to all of them. And then if you get an early intervention, you'll have the support of a service coordinator that helps work with you to connect you to other resources that you need as well.
So I would, just to expand on what Adele said, so she shared that she works with Mount Rogers, but early intervention is available through all your community service groups in Southwest Virginia. So it's not just Mount Rogers. I mean, we have, within United Way service area, we work with six different community service boards. And so in that, we work with various early intervention groups. But as she said, they can connect you to other resources. And they, through our work with early intervention with Graham, our therapist that we have worked with, he has been receiving developmental services, speech therapy, physical therapy, and starting soon some occupational therapy. And those therapists are very well versed in other resources, but also do your own research as well. If there are things that you don't know about or are curious about, or maybe you heard something about from another state, if there's something that you're curious about, research it, because that's how we also got connected to some other resources that we are using for Graham in the Down syndrome area. And I would also say too that there are various specialists in your region, and your pediatrician should know more about those too. And so that's really helped us gain a better understanding of what is most valuable. And the beauty of early intervention is that they do make home visits, but they can also go, if your child is in a child care center, they can go do their therapy visits at the child care center in an environment where your child is at most frequently, where they're comfortable. And they can also, those therapists can also work to educate the teacher in that classroom and teach them various interventions that can be used to help the child grow and hit those milestones accordingly. So I think we have to look at it from a full 360 perspective. There are all kinds of resources that don't necessarily come with a fee, and we have to look at those and try to connect as frequently as possible. And it's okay to ask questions, and it's okay to not know everything. I feel like with our last well child check at 9 months, unfortunately, I wasn't able to go, but I sent my husband with a list of 10 plus questions that I needed him to cover with our pediatrician, because I just want to ensure that we're covering our bases.
Yeah, and there are some support groups on social media as well. So I mean, just be careful of what support groups you get into, but there's definitely out there for all different areas of concern.
Sure. So we've kind of danced around this pretty much this entire interview, but we're talking about the value of early intervention. What is the value in itself and working to get our parents connected to services sooner?
Well, I mean, like Danielle has said a couple of times, I mean, you're the one that spends a time with your child. You are the one that knows your child best. So we come in as professionals in child development, but the parent is definitely the professional in their child, dealing with their, knowing their child and what their child's capable of doing. Early intervention is going to be there to support you. So besides service coordination, which, all of our families receive that service, they, service coordinator will check in every month, see how things are going. They're going to help connect you to other resources and just be somebody that can answer questions. So, you went to the doctor and the child didn't meet all of the things on the screening. You can call your service coordinator and ask them, and they can help you look into it and just monitor what's going on. Like Danielle said, there's speech services, occupational therapy, physical therapy, developmental services. We work with the Department of the Blind and Visually Impaired to help, get children set up, as well as children with hearing delays. It's just a resource. And anytime you can get help, it's much easier to lose weight or to monitor your weight if you don't allow yourself to get, too heavy first. Or it's easier to, exercise, a little bit at a time versus going and trying to do it all at once. So the more you can support earlier and younger, the less delay and the more progress we're going to see. And parents are the ones that spend all the time with their kids or at the daycare. So the more we can support, you know, those people that are spending all the time with the child, the more progress the child is going to make because they're getting it all the time.
I would say navigating these waters as a first-time parent, you know, early intervention has been a true lifesaver for me. They're the experts in their field, and though we are the experts on our children, I would also say they're great to bounce ideas off of. If there's something you want to try, they're very open and understanding. They also see other children like your child experiencing similar delays. So having something to compare that to and having their mind kind of relay those expertise and those understandings of what they see in a day-to-day setting is really helpful. I will say our therapists have become some of my most valuable assets in Graham's overall care, and their ability to set goals. When they work with you to sit down and set some goals, you know what you're working towards. You know where your child needs to be heading. And I think that's helpful. So when you reach and achieve those goals, you're like, yes, my child did that. They knocked it out of the park. He's exceeding the goals that we set. And it just makes you feel, you know, heard, seen, valued into what the time and effort that you're doing. But I would also say, you know, child care teachers are also, yes, they are experts on the children in their classrooms, but they're not pediatricians and they are not therapists. So they can use early intervention as a resource to learn and gain more knowledge and capacity on dealing with developmental delays and how best to support those children in those classrooms every day. And I think that, again, is worth its weight in gold when you're talking about they don't have to go through another series of professional development and ongoing training when it's what I consider on-the-job training happening right then, right there. And so I think if families are open to it, one piece of advice I would give is don't be scared. They are there to help you. They are there to walk alongside you with this journey, but they are not there to tell you how to parent, and they're not questioning you or judging what you bring to the table.
So as we're looking towards the future, you know, after early intervention, you know, what services are available, you know, to parents as your child transitions out of that age?
So, I mean, our services do stop the day before their third birthday. Here in Virginia, they are actually eligible to transition the year the child turns two before September 30th. So your service coordinator would help you connect to the local school district. And the school would do their own testing to see if they qualified for services. There's also outpatient clinics in all the different, you know, counties and areas that can provide continued support and services. And then, I mean, just always checking with your pediatrician because, you know, there are, like, the developmental clinics. There's one up in Roanoke, and I think there's one down near Gate City as well. And so, you know, those are places that you can usually have to go through your pediatrician to get into. But they are a resource if you have continued concerns about what's going on.
Those referrals for those developmental clinics, as Adele mentioned, they can be a lengthy wait. So, as she said, as you're thinking into the future, age two, age three, if you do have further concerns that you feel like maybe early intervention may not be able to address or even your pediatrician, asking for a referral sooner rather than later, it can be your best bet. And I mean, unfortunately, there is sometimes a 6 to 8 month waiting period for those clinics. However, there are, as Adele mentioned, the Care Connection of Southwest Virginia also connects parents through telehealth services to specialists across the state. So if that is a concern, and that is also a referral process as well, but the wait is not nearly as long, and you're able to get connected to other resources that may be able to help you as you are thinking and moving forward through those transitional years.
And I just thought, like the with the school. A lot of our parents, because, you know, you're looking at your 2 or 3 year old and it's scary to think that they could go to school. School services doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be put in a classroom. Sometimes it's just you taking them to the school to get the speech or occupational therapy or physical therapy. Sometimes they do qualify for a classroom placement, but it's going to be much same as the wait list for all of those, you know, the specialty doctors and whatnot. It's going to be easier to go through that testing process with the service coordinator there to support you. And then for you to say, I'm not sure I'm ready for this, versus, you know, waiting until your child is a month away from 3 years old. And now I want to go through that process because it does take time to get it done. And it's just a lot. It's like all of, I feel like everything we've talked about is, it's a lot to go through as a parent, and you're trying to do what's best for your child, and you have all of these people telling you what you need to do, and I think it's okay to step back and say, I need to breathe, I need to be a parent, and so just, you know, having that support of the service coordinator that can help guide you and answer questions.
So as we wrap up here, you know, parents have any questions or anything like that? You guys are obviously, you know, experts in these sort of fields. If somebody would want to reach out to you, how would they get in touch with you guys?
They can contact me at United Way of Southwest Virginia. My email is at unitedwaysvva.org. And I'm also able to share connections to all of the community services across our region and then other resources that families may need. So we are here, United Way is here to help expand and connect families to those partnerships and also, you know, even connect with potentially other families as well. So
yeah, I would say United Way is probably the easiest, since, you know, people listening may not necessarily live in any of my 6 counties. Contacting me is not necessarily going to be as helpful, but reaching out to Danielle or, you know, like we've said before, talking to your pediatrician when you do have concerns or if you want more information. You can also Google early intervention. They have, I believe it's itcofvirginia.org. They changed the website a couple years back and it's saved on my computer, so I don't have to remember it. But if you go in there, you can put in what county that you live in, and it will connect you with your central point of entry or your local system manager.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for being here today. Any last thoughts before we get out of here?
Just take a deep breath. Parenting does not come with a handbook. Our children are all different, and it doesn't matter if you've had 10 children. They're all going to do their own thing and meet at their own development. And there's a lot of things that play into that, you know, pregnancy, birth history, time in the NICU. Just take a deep breath one day at a time and just be open to the resources that are out there.
I would say from a parent perspective, we said it a lot, but you do know your child best. And so being there to support your child is and connecting them to resources, sometimes asking for help is the best thing that you can do for them. And knowing that people are there to walk alongside you is sometimes the only thing that you can do. And I think that's, you know, that you're doing the best thing in that moment.
All right, perfect. Well, thank you guys so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.